Good morning, Gathering Church. We will start with some announcements this morning. As I think we probably know, we will not be meeting next Sunday. Next Sunday is the long weekend, and so we won't have our morning worship here. We do hope that you will find rest and refreshment on that last Sunday of summer. Today actually feels like the last Sunday of summer, but I'm glad you're here today. Next Sunday will hopefully be a gloriously sunny day that we can enjoy the last Sunday of summer. Then in September, our Sunday, September 13th, we're going to join together for clothing distribution. That's one of the activities here. And this is a time of showing God's kindness and generosity to the children and the youth of the Chandler Mowat community. So we hope that you'll join on that special Sunday here together. We want to thank you for the many ways that you give to the life of the Gathering Church. Everyone who gives time and investment and financial gifts, these are all ways that we continue God's good work here on Sundays and everywhere in the community. I'm now going to read a passage from Habakkuk 3. Has anybody here read Habakkuk before? Yeah, I figured it would probably just be Rich. Sorry, I don't want to out you on that, but I'm not actually shocked. This morning we are going to be reading a fair bit of Habakkuk. Well, you'll be able to leave this morning and feel like, okay, now I kind of know what Habakkuk is about. So that's okay if you didn't know before this morning, but I'm going to end with the punchline. Or I'm going to start with the punchline, so I'm going to read right at the end. And then we'll see how we got there. Even though the fig trees have no blossoms, and there are no grapes in the vines, even though the olive crops fail, and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields, and the cattle barns are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. The Sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes me as sure-footed as a deer, able to tread upon the heights. Let's continue in worship this morning. Now we will come back to our time of singing.
You're welcome to stand.
So when Catherine and I were talking about this morning and sharing this morning, we sort of recognized that this weekend is, and next weekend, really, Labor Day, it's like the end of summer, and we're coming to that end of a season in one way. And for some people here, like, summer really does have different rhythms. Some people, of course, kids are off school. And even those of us that, like, continue to work kind of the same all summer, there's still that sense in of our heads that, like, summer is summer. And then we have to go back to regular life in one way or another. And that's sort of what we're walking towards right now. And sometimes that's hard. Sometimes it comes with uncertainty. We're not quite sure what's going to happen when we go back to something new for some in September. And sometimes that just that sense of going back to a regular life means confronting things that are hard. Because some things about regular life just feel hard. There are things that we wish could change, and they don't. And that's just hard. Some of you know that I worked with MCC, Mennonite Central Committee, for a long time in Latin America, and often surrounded by hard. That was kind of the everyday life. And so the reflection I have today was something that first sort of came out of different conversations with the Mennonite church that I was part of in Colombia. And it's all that realization that we live in a world that there's just so many people facing lifelong conditions of pain, physical or emotional pain, lifelong conditions of oppression or violence. And again, just uncertainty, where life just is never quite settled. And I've walked with many people living in that situation, and they come to my mind in these kinds of moments. I think of Victor and Rocio in Ecatepec in Mexico, who were responding to migrants and always very directly knowing that they were meeting Jesus in each one of the hundreds of migrants that have slept and eaten in their church building. I think of Teresa and the many Cubans who have held up a can of MCC meat and have said to me, you know, this is how I know that Jesus hasn't forgotten us. I think of a dear friend of mine, Hawis, who obsessively tested out different tree grafts with cacao plants to develop a kind of cacao tree that would flourish in the Colombian rainforest so that farmers could grow cacao that turns into chocolate and have income. I think of Vicky Mamani in the Bolivian highlands and her huge cholita skirt and her bowler hat and the way she was kind of an evangelist for vegetables, helping women make these greenhouses up in the highlands to be able to grow vegetables. I think of many people that I've met in the last couple of years here in KW who don't have a home, who are among those that are unhoused in our city, and how much resilience it takes to get up every day. I think of those people that are part of the Circle of Friends program, or people in this church that are reaching out to people that live very precariously. We do all of these things to build change, but sometimes it feels like we're not quite getting things done, like things are not yet fixed, and we don't get to that place as like, okay, job's done. And we do become weary hearing about suffering. We invest our energy trying to change conditions, but more often than not, it just feels like justice and peace elude us. It's always out there. And with each sign of failure, it can feel like another layer of hope is dying. When will we overcome all that is wrong? So like I said already, we're going to read Habakkuk, not all of the book, but it's a very short book. It's only 3 chapters, and we're going to read a good bit of it this morning. Habakkuk was a prophet, and he lived also in difficult times. 3 centuries after David and Solomon and all that glorious part of Israel's kingdom, and he lived 600 years before Jesus. So there really was... it was an era of a lot of violence and moral decay and corruption. And again, there was really no sign of things getting better anytime soon. There was no sign of things improving. I'm going to start out by reading a bit of Habakkuk chapter 1. And this is Habakkuk calling out to God. Our Lord, how long must I beg for your help before you listen? How long before you save us from all this violence? Why do you make me watch such terrible injustice? Why do you allow violence, lawlessness, crime, and cruelty to spread everywhere? Laws cannot be enforced. Justice is always the loser. Criminals crowd out honest people and twist the laws around. Does this sound familiar? Does it sound like the nightly news, perhaps, or the morning radio? Do you share any of his questions? How many times have we said, God, seriously, how long? Yeah. There are also current day prophets that voice strong lament. A couple years ago, I came across the writings of Austin Channing Brown. She speaks about racism in the United States from a faith perspective. Even while rooted in faith, interpersonal, social, and systemic harm just feels overwhelming. And so she writes this. I have learned not to fear the death of hope. Each death makes it clear where we cannot place our hope. And as a result of this clarity, new and more focused inspiration emerges. We cannot even place our hope on ourselves. We are not saviors. We live in the shadow of hope. Yes, I think so often we put our hope in something that then later disappoints us. We put our hope in a person, or in a particular leader, or in a new social movement, a different job, a new relationship, the drop in gas prices. We think that some of these, oh, now things are finally getting better. Things are finally, that's that sense we get often and not. And then hope dies again. And again. But Channing Brown invites us to see that these deaths are an opportunity for resurrection. An opportunity to re-find inspiration that is more focused. But ever since reading these words a few years ago, I just keep wondering, what does a shadow of hope mean? Most of the time, we associate shadows with something negative. In the first song we sang, there was that sense of like living in the shadows, and the connotation was not positive. It was like hard. We don't trust those shadowy figures when we're reading a book and it talks about some shadowy figure. We know that that's not going to be the good guy in the story, right? Shadows can seem cold and dark, and they make things hard to see. Most of us are really bothered by not knowing things, not understanding things. Not knowing things can feel shameful or create anxiety. Maybe it takes our brain back to being in school and having the teacher point at us and ask us, you know, a multiplication question, and we just have no idea. It's hard. In contrast, knowing and understanding things give us a sense of control. We can criticize Adam and Eve for eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge. But I suspect that many of us would have been equally lured into gaining the knowledge of good and evil because we want to know things. But I'm noticing that perhaps there is hope precisely in accepting that I am in the shadow. And that means, because I'm in the shadow, that means that I'm not seeing everything. If I look around and I don't see hope, I can realize, well, I'm living in the shadows, and for that reason, I don't see everything, and there could very well be signs of good outside of my sight line. Just because I can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. We tend to believe what we see. But in response to Habakkuk's complaints, God reminded the prophet that he didn't know everything that was happening. In the shadows, there is mystery. And in mystery, there is hope. So here is part of God's response. Look at the nations and watch and be utterly amazed, for I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. You can trust what I say about the future. It may take a long time, but keep waiting. It will happen. We can trust that amidst this mystery, God is unfolding a vision of love and justice and peace. God is not turning a blind eye to suffering. So God keeps talking and says this: look at the proud. They trust in themselves and their lives are crooked. But the righteous will live by their faithfulness to God. Wealth is treacherous and the arrogant are never at rest. They open their mouths as wide as the grave, and like death they are never satisfied. In their greed they have gathered up many nations and swallowed many peoples. They become rich by extortion. But how much longer can this go on? Because you have plundered many nations, now all that the survivors will plunder you. You committed murder through the countryside and filled the towns with violence. What sorrow awaits you who build big houses with money gained dishonestly? You believe your wealth buys security, putting your family's nest beyond the reach of danger. But the murders you committed, you have shamed your name and forfeited your lives. The very stones in the walls cry out against you, and the beams in the ceiling echo the complaint. What sorrow awaits you who build cities? With money gained through murder and corruption, has not the Lord of Heaven's armies promised that the wealth of nations will turn to ashes? For as the waters fill the sea, the earth will be filled with an awareness of the glory of the Lord. You cut down the forests of Lebanon, now you will be cut down. You destroyed the wild animals, now their terror will be yours. I've spent years living in places where this kind of injustice is right there, stark, in front. Yes, indeed, it's true. Whole peoples and nations are indeed crushed by the greed of a few. And when we'd read these passages in the Columbian Mennonite Church, it would feel like a direct reflection of everyday lives. And the terms of this passage are kind of jarring. For Mennonites, it's like, oh, well, we don't really want God to be violent either, and I don't know what to do with this. But my Columbian colleagues wouldn't read it and gloat about revenge. They would just hear God affirming that, yes, there is a bigger picture. Justice will happen. Peace and restoration will come. They would just hear that, yes, their hearts would be satisfied and their eyes opened to see this happen at a micro level in everyday life. So, yes, we are in the shadow of hope, but being in the shadows means that we're not in total darkness. Shadows are signs that light exists. Shadows prove that there's something solid and real that we're not quite seeing. Shadows can seem intangible. You can't quite touch it, right? When it's your shadow, you can't quite stand on it. It's not that easy. They're hard to pin down. But shadows exist because something tangible exists right beyond them. Jesus taught us that the kingdom of God is here with us, and it is visible in the shadow of hope. So perhaps instead of feeling frustrated about living in the shadow of hope, we can feel encouraged. The shadow of hope shows us that there's something that we don't yet see clearly, and yet that thing is impacting our reality. Now, I'm not saying all this to mean that, well, since we can't control anything, we have nothing to do, so we'll just sit back and wait. This is not an invitation to disconnection or apathy. What I do mean is that our immediate circumstances are not an excuse for losing hope. We don't have an excuse for losing hope. It is a call to remain faithful to God's kingdom. And that is the deepest message that I learned in so many communities near and far. We have no excuse for losing hope. Hope is the way of transformation. So then we'll see Habakkuk's response. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, Lord. Repeat them in our day. In our time, make them known. And in wrath, remember mercy. Habakkuk listens to God and he recognizes, yes, God is going to act and God will stop the arrogant and God will dismantle corruption and violence, and God will put an end to the destruction of nature, and God will ensure honesty, transparency, and God will ensure all that is right. And Habakkuk begs God to do this. And then I think Habakkuk pauses for a moment and he realizes what he's asking, and he adds one more request. And in wrath, remember mercy. I see this little "and" there as like a pivot towards mercy. And to me, it sounds like Habakkuk saying, yes, God, do all of that. Destroy all the evil. Destroy all those that are doing bad things. Eliminate all the causes of injustice. Eliminate all the causes of violence. And wait, God, also have mercy, because maybe this also has something to do with me. God's response to Habakkuk was excellent news for everyone who is not violent, not arrogant, not dishonest, not selfish, not careless, not indifferent. And I suspect Habakkuk saw that what Jesus saw, what Jesus then taught several centuries later. So I'll just paraphrase Matthew 5. Jesus roughly says something like this: that's great that you haven't killed anyone, but you hold on to anger and resentment towards certain people. Hurtful words hurl out of your mouth. You go around judging people. When he was 5, my son told me that I'm a judgy person. And I think he was probably right. So yes, there are times that we are killing people in our hearts. Yes, that's great that you live up to the letter of the law and you keep your commitments, strictly speaking. But you look for any possible escape routes to blame others rather than taking responsibility for our own mistakes. Yeah, I did that, but. You look for the possible ways to get ahead. So these lines between the traditional cinematic good guys and bad guys are just not so clear. Our social media feeds keep suggesting that those specific terrible ones are over there and they're the ones to blame, wherever that is. But that's not the full truth. There are parts of ourselves that we would rather not bring into the light. So we too need to keep opening ourselves for transformation. So then, especially in summer months and summer days, not like today, but sunny summer days, I notice one more thing about shadows. Shadows can feel like obstruction, but shadows also protect. When the sun is blazing hot, yeah, we go look to sit under the shadow of a tree. I think perhaps the shadow of hope that we live in, that we are living in now, is the mercy of God operating alongside God's justice and peace. The shadow of hope is God's mercy. So that's where we come to Habakkuk's glorious final response, and it resonates with us. Even though the fig trees have no blossoms and there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in the God of my salvation. The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes me as sure-footed as a deer, able to tread upon the heights. That's how we go forth facing the next days and months. To close our time this morning, I invite you to take a moment to feel God's presence with you. In those spaces in your heart and mind of uncertainty, of knowing your own weaknesses, pause and know that God is present. God, we come before you this morning with gratitude because in our lives you are our strength. And so we ask you, God, to make our feet sure on the path before us. Thank you, God, for going with us in the path before us.